All right, good morning. Welcome to the Court of Appeals. I just want to, before we get started, make sure that both counsel can hear me.
You're both nodding your heads.
Thank you. Great. All right. Well, our first case this morning, and I'm here, I'm Judge Conley, I'm presiding along with Judge Reyes and Judge Gaitas. Our first case this morning is Modine versus Maribel Enterprises, LLC and Deed, as its case number is 820-0018, 820-0352. As all parties are aware, the appellant will have 15 minutes for their argument in chief, and then the respondent will have 15 minutes for their argument, and then appellant will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. So if we're ready, counsel for the relator, you can get started and just please begin by telling us who you are in a loud, clear voice. Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the court. My name is Davita Mickey Williams, and I am counsel for relator Don Modine. Mr. Modine is back for the Court of Appeals today because the unemployment law judges assigned to his benefits case have made additional mistakes after this court's reversal and remand. In particular, there are two errors. First, one ULJ found that Mr. Modine was not available for suitable employment because he, quote, placed a 20-mile and 20-minute restriction on his job search. That finding is plainly contradicted by the facts, which show that Mr. Modine actively applied to jobs as far as 40 miles away from his home, never received any job offers, and testified that he would have accepted a job offer because he needed work. Second, a different ULJ found that Deed could institute a revenue recapture on allegedly overpaid funds, even though Mr. Modine's motion for reconsideration on the issue of availability was still before the first ULJ. Deed now states that because of COVID, it will not pursue the revenue recapture, but that does not end the matter. Although the procedural challenge to the recapture is now moot, there is still the underlying issue of whether there is a properly payable debt in the first place. This is important for two reasons. First, Deed has not clearly stated that it will not in the future attempt to recapture the alleged debt. Second, Mr. Modine did not receive benefits for an entire year. If Mr. Modine was available for suitable employment during the benefits period, not only does Mr. Modine not owe Deed, but Deed may in fact owe Mr. Modine for funds that it did not pay. Mr. Modine seeks reversal of both decisions in order finding him that he was available for suitable employment during the benefits period and a remand for further proceedings to determine if he was in fact underpaid by Deed.
Ms. Williams? Ms. Williams?
Yes.
Yeah, so I have a question for you on the relationship between the two issues. Let's assume, just for the sake of argument, we disagreed with you on the first issue. Would that make the second issue moot?
If you disagree, yes, it would make the second issue moot.
Okay, and we'll certainly be asking opposing counsel about that second issue as to where exactly they stand on that, but thank you for that clarification.
And just to add a little bit, I think we would still want from Deed a clarification of whether or not it intends to pursue this in the future, so Mr. Modine is aware of what's going to happen.
Well, I imagine better than that, you'd want the money.
Well, yes. Yes. Best case scenario, that's what would happen. Turning to the first issue of whether Mr. Modine was available for suitable employment, under the statute, there must be no other restrictions that prevent accepting suitable employment. In Work Inc. v. Buey, this court stated that the availability requirement merely demands that applicants who have lost their employment remain genuine in their willingness to accept new and suitable employment. It provides the lowest statutory bar. Mr. Modine believes he met this low statutory bar. At the June 2018 hearing, Mr. Modine testified that he had applied to jobs in multiple counties, even though some of those jobs, in his opinion, were too far. However, the ULJ never clearly asked him whether or not he would accept a job offer, and he never testified that he would not accept a job offer. At most, he said that he would not feel comfortable with jobs that were far away from his home. At the August 2019 hearing, after the remand, the ULJ and I explicitly asked Mr. Modine whether or not he would accept a job offer for one of the jobs he believed was too far. And he said yes, because he needed a job. The ULJ cannot make adverse inferences that explicitly contradict Mr. Modine's testimony merely because she failed to ask the important questions at the first hearing.
Well, Ms. Williams, doesn't this really come down to a credibility determination as to whether or not the ULJ believed his earlier testimony or his later testimony?
That is what Deed says, and I respectfully disagree. And I think in the first hearing, that was also Deed's argument, and this court disagreed. The ULJ tries to.
Well, I don't know if we necessarily disagreed with the ULJ. We just said we need to have more information to make a determination as to whether or not the ULJ's decision was appropriate or not.
That's fair. I was talking more about the first issue that was actually reversed, not this issue that we're discussing now. But the ULJ does try to explain away the discrepancy between the evidence and her findings as a credibility determination, but I believe that has to fail. One of the reasons that she finds Mr. Modine was not credible was because, in her opinion, he, quote, rejected a job offer to work on first shift at his first employer and, quote, wanted to be close to his wife during the day. The ULJ further hypothesized that Mr. Modine could have been, quote, gathering information about wages and have no genuine interest in the position.
Right. And to that second point there, Ms. Williams, didn't Relator say in the June 2018 hearing that he would apply just to see if he would get a response?
Yes, he did say that he would apply to see if he got a response, which is what I think every applicant does. They apply to see if they get a response. Mr. Modine applied to over 100 jobs. He conducted over 20 interviews. He never turned down any interviews, and he never received a job offer.
Right. I understand that part. But when somebody, in response to why, being asked why they're applying, and the response is, well, I just want to see if I'm going to get a response. That to me sounds like, well, I just want to see what they're going to say. That doesn't sound like an unequivocal, I'm applying because I want to get a job. I need a job. I don't care where it is located. He had the opportunity to come out and say that. And in fact, he said the opposite. He said, you know, I don't want to have to travel more than 20 minutes or 20 miles because of my family situation. And the reasons are very laudable as to why he doesn't want to, but the question ultimately becomes for us as to whether or not he actually truly was available. And it seems like there are enough statements from the June 2018 hearing to support the ULJ's finding of fact that he was not, or determination, I should say, that he was not available.
And Your Honor, I think what I have to point you back to is Work Inc. v. Buie, which says that this is the lowest statutory bar. And there has to be a distinction between an applicant's preference and an applicant and a restriction. And here, there was no actual restriction on any of the parts of Mr. Modine's job search. When he testified at the later hearing that when he was applying to jobs online, he never clicked a box that says, I don't want to, you know, apply to jobs further than 20 miles away from my home. I only want jobs 10 miles close to my home. He applied to some jobs that were over 40 miles from his home in person and left business cards there. And that is in the record. So when you're looking at all of the actions, I think that it's very clear that all of the actions were not restricted in any way. And this statute is meant to be interpreted in a remedial fashion. And I think that that's important because here we have an applicant who is over 60, who is a trade worker, and who only has a high school education. So when the ULJ is asking some of these open-ended questions that aren't very clear, he's giving answers that just say, yeah, I think it's too far. But he wasn't by any means saying, I would not accept a job if it was this far away from my home. Judge Connolly, I think you're on mute. I can't hear you.
I love Zoom. Ms. Williams, would you at least concede that the primary issue on the remand was the defining the market? And it seems to me that's not an issue now. It looks like that was done correctly. Would you agree with me on that?
Mr. Moonin is not contesting what the market was. So yes, the market, the ULJ determined was Sherburne County, Anoka County, Wright County, Hennepin, Benton, and Stearns County. And there's information in the record that Mr. Modine applied to jobs in Sherburne, Anoka, Hennepin, and perhaps Wright, I believe. I think Benton and Stearns were the only two where he didn't apply to jobs. But he applied widely in those counties. We're not contesting that that is in fact the market.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, this just confirms a point Judge Willis made long before he retired, which is be careful when you remand, because it just gives the district court an opportunity to screw it up differently. So,
and that is what I think happened. And just to return to an earlier point that I had, the ULJ's reliance on Mr. Modine, you know, supposedly rejecting a job offer from his first employer, I think contradicts the Court of Appeals determination that Mr. Modine was terminated from his job. And I think some of the testimony that she allowed was just inappropriate and irrelevant based on the Court of Appeals findings. So underlying her credibility determination, I think are some serious issues of law that are incorrect. And I think unless the court has further answers, I'll rest on my brief for the rest of my time.
Thank you, Ms. Williams. We'll now hear for counsel for the department.
Good morning, Your Honors. Good morning, counsel. May it please the court, my name is Carrie Phillips and I represent the respondent, Deed. So whether an applicant is available for suitable employment is a question of fact. The ULJ here found that Modine was not available for suitable employment because he was restricting his availability to a 20-mile radius. So this finding is supported by substantial evidence in the record, including his own testimony in the June 2018 hearing, as well as evidence of his actions in declining to work a first shift position at Maribel. After this matter was remanded, Modine changed his testimony. He changed his position and said that he was willing to work more than 20 miles away. The ULJ made a detailed credibility determination, finding that his testimony in the first hearing, or the second hearing, I should say, was more credible than his testimony in the hearing on remand. And that credibility determination is supported by the record. So,
Ms. Phillips, how do you respond to Ms. Williams's point that he did apply for jobs? I agree what he said is what he said, and you know, we can all look at that and make our own decisions. But I mean, if he did apply for jobs, he applied for jobs. So how does that play in with your argument that he unnecessarily restricted his availability for employment?
Yes, so applying to jobs in different locations is certainly evidence that an applicant may be willing and able to accept employment in that location, but it's not the only evidence. And here the ULJ weighed that evidence with other evidence, namely Modine's testimony in the June 2018 hearing that he was not willing to accept jobs further than 20 miles out. And he also talks about those applications that you're referring to. He's going through maybe his documentation about his applications, and he notes, and this is on page 74 of the transcript, he says, oh, it says in my notes, Fridley, but too far away. He noted some others and said, oh, I have a question mark there. I think that's way up north. He mentioned some others and said, I think they're too far away also. So he's testifying about applications, but he also is saying that they're too far away. And he said that he was not willing to accept employment more than 20 miles away. And the court noted this testimony in its decision. So in the second hearing, the judge did ask him about his inconsistent testimony and said, why did you say that then? And you're saying this now. She asked him that a couple different times, and he wasn't able to give a good explanation as to why they were different. And so that kind of is the foundation for the ULJ's credibility determination. But to answer your question, I believe it is evidence of availability, but it's not per se evidence, which is what the ULJ reasoned. It's not, it doesn't equal availability. It's evidence of availability. And it's certainly evidence that he was seeking jobs you know, outside of that restriction, but it's not per se evidence.
Ms. Phillips, I'm a little confused there because all that's required is that he be available. And this is not a situation where you have somebody who says, oh yeah, I'm available, but they don't apply. They don't make any efforts. And as we all know, actions speak louder than words. You have somebody here who not only applied, but he applied all over the place, and not only applied all over, he actually drove more than 20 miles to locations and applied and dropped off business cards, and he never had the opportunity to accept or reject any offer because he didn't receive any, but he certainly made substantial efforts and far more than oftentimes we see in these deed cases. Why aren't his actions enough to speak for him as to show that he actually was available for suitable employment?
Okay. And I would just refer back to the language of the statute. So, you know, subdivision 15 defines available for suitable employment. It says available for suitable employment, means an applicant is ready, willing, and able to accept suitable employment. He said in the June 2018 hearing that he was not willing to accept first shift positions that were more than 20 minutes away. So he said he was not willing to do that. And that that's kind of the plain language of the statute there. And again, you know, he does show an active job search. I definitely cannot deny that. And he does apply for a number of jobs, but he says that he's not willing to accept a job more than 20 minutes away. And he says that repeatedly and consistently in the June hearing.
Right, but that's earlier. I mean, is that even appropriate to use that his statements then against him, especially when his actions show that he actually is willing and able? I mean, you don't drive 50 miles to a place to apply for a job unless you actually have some interest in that job. I mean, most reasonable people wouldn't do that. I don't understand how that's not completely indicative of his willingness to work more than 20 minutes or 20 miles away from his house.
And a different ULJ may have made a different finding on that evidence. This ULJ found that he was not willing and able to accept employment. And there is substantial evidence in the record that supports that finding, and namely his own testimony. Again, he does explain that he did apply to jobs, but he said several times they were too far away. So as the ULJ notes, there is a distinction between applying to jobs and being willing to accept a job.
And Ms. Phillips, I just want to go back to a question that Judge Reyes had for you, and that is the propriety of the ULJ's reference to the earlier testimony to make a determination about availability. Is that appropriate? I didn't hear your response to that question.
Yeah, I believe it is appropriate. It's part of the record. She does confront him about it in the second hearing. She says to him, you know, in the first hearing, you told me something different. Why are you telling me this now? So she does give him the opportunity to explain, you know, why it's inconsistent. But it is part of the record. You know, he had multiple opportunities in the first hearing to say that he would have accepted positions outside of a 20 mile radius, and he never said that. So in the remand hearing, you know, she confronts him about that and allows him to explain the inconsistencies. So I believe it is proper for her to rely on that earlier testimony. In the court's decision remanding it, the court kind of accepts it as fact. The court notes, you know, Modine testified he has a 20 mile limitation. We're going to remand this to see if to see about labor market area. So, I mean, the court accepts his testimony for what it is. It wasn't, and if you read the transcript of the June 2018 hearing, it doesn't seem particularly like there's a conflict there. It seems pretty straightforward. So when he changes the testimony in the later hearing, the ULJ does note that on the record and allows him to explain the discrepancy. So I think it is proper for her to decide that that earlier testimony was just more credible.
Ms. Phillips, can you respond to the question that Ms. Williams, or a point Ms. Williams raised, my apologies, Ms. Williams, I may not get this as accurately as possible, but I think the gist of it was the record is lacking here because the ULJ never asked him if he was, in essence, willing and available to take employment beyond a 20-mile radius or 20-minute radius from his house on remand. Is there any indication that the ULJ actually just came right out and asked him, are you willing to do that?
In the hearing on remand, I believe he says that he is willing to do that. And so I believe he's changed his testimony at that point. So I'm not disputing that he said he was willing to in the remand hearing in August. In the June 2018 hearing before the remand, I believe he does say he's not willing to, and that's the testimony quoted on pages 15 through 17 of the brief. And I hope I'm not going too far off your question here, but she says, if somebody would have offered you a different job that started in the mornings, would you have taken it? He says, if it was closer to home, yes. ULJ says, all right, how close to home would it have to be for you to say yes? He says, 10 miles. She asks, what's special about 10 miles? Why is that important? He says, well, if Kathy has a problem, I could go home. Maribel was 40 miles away. He then changes that to 20. So I believe he does say in that June hearing that he's not willing to accept a job. First he says 10 miles, but then he says 20 miles from his home. In the hearing on remand, he does say, I am willing to accept a job more than 20 miles away. And the ULJ then says, well, why did you tell me that now? And you said, why is your testimony different? And he says, I can't give you an adequate answer for that. So I believe he does directly say, I'm not willing to take a job more than 20 miles away in that June hearing. And then on remand, he changes his position and says, oh, I was willing to accept a job more than 20 miles away.
Ms. Phillips, one issue that I think it does concern us is whether or not you're going to go after the money. I think Ms. Williams has a fair point. You say you're not today, but what about tomorrow? And presumably this pandemic, praise God, will end someday. So I guess what we're concerned is, can you assure us that Deed is not going to try to get the money if we agree with you on the first point about suitability of employment? Can you make that representation to the court?
Okay. Well, legally, if you agree with us that he was not available, he is overpaid unemployment benefits. And under the unemployment statute, that does create an obligation to repay those benefits. And Minnesota can recover overpayments through the Revenue Recapture Act. And Deed did start those proceedings. They canceled all revenue recapture proceedings because of the pandemic. And so it doesn't exist at this time. If Deed decided...
That sounds like no to me. It is my understanding from years past that generally speaking, if there has been an overpayment, Deed doesn't go back and get it. Can you tell him, is that still generally the case? Can you tell me?
Deed does not recover the overpayments?
That when there's an overpayment, it is my understanding that Deed generally doesn't go to try to get the money back. Apart from, the Revenue Recapture Act and the pandemic and all that, I'm just talking under normal circumstances, does Deed generally try to get that money, or do they just kind of, write it off as a bad debt?
Deed does try to recover overpayments. I can't tell you what percentage of the time they do, but they do. And there's one way of doing that is through revenue recapture. And they have to follow the procedure set out in the statute for revenue recapture. So if Deed wanted to start that procedure again, Deed would have to issue a new notice to Mr. Modine with appeal rights. And then Mr. Modine would have the opportunity to appeal that. But at this time, the notice that was issued, it has been canceled. And I do see in one of counsel's submissions, she says, well, we haven't got any kind of official documentation that it's been canceled. To my knowledge, I don't think Deed has issued any kind of official document to applicants. I included in the addendum just a screenshot of his account showing that it was canceled. You know, I believe if he calls in, a Deed representative would tell him that it's canceled. But at this time, it doesn't exist. If Deed does pursue it in the future, he would have the opportunity to appeal the notice at that time. You know, certainly circumstances may have changed with the overpayment. If counsel wins this appeal, he will not, you know, have an overpayment, and there would be nothing to recover. So it may be different in the future.
So let's say for the sake of argument, we agree with you on the suitability issue. Okay, and then, you know, the pandemic ends, and then you send out a new notice. I would like to know, and he says, you know, well, I don't have the money. So what are the grounds to challenge that? Is it like, I don't have the money anymore, or, you know, I'm poor, or, you know, we're on a fixed income, Social Security? I mean, what are the grounds to challenge that on a new appeal?
For purposes of the Deed action, Deed needs to follow the procedures for revenue recapture. So we need to provide notice within, I believe, 5 days of referring it to Minnesota Revenue. The hearings for whether we've done it right is kind of confined to that. And then at that point, when it's referred to the Department of Revenue and they may garnish returns, I'm not sure if there's a way for applicants to, you know, to stop it at that point. So I can't answer your question once it's referred to Department of Revenue. Basically, we just have to follow the revenue recapture statute and make sure that we cover all of our bases and provide the right notice.
All right, thank you, Ms. Phillips.
Judge Connolly?
Yes, I think Judge Reyes has another question.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, Ms. Phillips, so I just want to make sure I'm clear on this second issue. And in your brief, you said that on March 28, 2020, Deed canceled all revenue recapture claims due to the COVID-19 pandemic. It sounds to me like what you're saying then is the claims have not been canceled. In other words, they haven't been terminated. They haven't been ended. What you're saying is they've merely been postponed?
No.
Or stayed? Are they over and done with, or is there still a chance that Deed would see, if we agreed with you on the first issue, Deed may still at some point try to go after Relator to recapture this money?
Yes. I can't say that it won't. I don't know what Deed will do in the future. Deed would have to start over at the beginning, though. Deed would have to refer it to Revenue, send notice to Mr. Modine, and kind of start at the beginning of the procedure. Deed may not pursue it. I don't know what Deed will do with the pursuing the overpayments. But at this point, Deed is not pursuing a revenue recapture. It has been canceled. So it would need to start at the beginning. And I can't say what Deed will do in the future about that.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Phillips. Ms. Williams, you'll have the last word, please.
Thank you. Just to return to some things that Ms. Phillips stated, I wanted to clarify what happened in the transcripts. So in the first hearing, the transcripts that are relevant, it's page 73 of the transcript. And Mr. Modine says, the question is, you know, from the court, I'm struggling to understand Mr. Modine. If you're telling me you would have taken a job if it was in the morning, if it was 10 miles away or less from your home, is that right? Mr. Modine says, no more than maybe 20 minutes away. The judge says, okay, we'll say 20 minutes, however many miles that is. And Mr. Modine says, about 20 minutes at 60 miles an hour, it's 20 miles. And then further down, the question that she asked him is, okay, so anything 20 minutes away, 25 minutes away or more, you just wouldn't feel comfortable with. And Mr. Modine says, that is correct. So again, what I would say is that at most, what Mr. Modine says is that he would not be comfortable taking a job more than 20 miles away from his home, but he doesn't state that he would not. And I think that the 2019 transcript clarifies that. I don't think he changes his testimony, but he clarifies it on pages 24 and 25 of the 2019 hearing. On those pages, the questions are a bit more clear. So would you have been willing to drive an hour to get to work? Mr. Modine says, if they made me a job offer and pay was accordingly, yes, I would have considered their job offer. Next question, would you have accepted a job offer on first shift? Answer, yes. Question. So again, do you remember when you told me in the first hearing that 20 minutes was too far away for you to drive on first shift because of the responsibilities you had to help your wife? Mr. Modine says, yes, I remember that. The question is, yeah, so why are you telling me now today that you would drive 60 minutes? And Mr. Modine says, I don't have an adequate answer for that. But just, you know, less than two or three lines down the transcript, the judge asks, do you have anything else you want to tell me before I give the attorney a chance to ask questions? And Mr. Modine says, without any prompting from the court, really, I did, at our last court hearing, I did mention the fact on the distance due to my wife, but that's not like I would have not taken a job in them areas, but I preferred not to. And then he says again, without any prompting, I think my testimony back then was I preferred to work closer to home and preferred to stay in the 20 mile area of my home, but that did not mean I would restrict myself to it, but that's what I did prefer. So I don't think there was any change in the testimony. I think Mr. Modine clarified his testimony. And then further down on pages 25 and 26, when I ask even more targeted questions, there are some more targeted answers about why Mr. Modine was applying for these jobs. And he says, because I needed work. I think that's all that the statute requires, is that he needed a job and he was applying because of that. To Judge Connolly's questions about the recapture, it's my understanding that when a deed attempts to recapture, the funds are taken out of an applicant's taxes. So there's no defense that you don't have enough money because it's taken out of your taxes. And I think it's important that we get some sort of resolution here, because I don't think Deed has clearly stated that it would not try in the future to actually recapture on this debt. And then the only ground that I understand there to be to challenge it is whether there's a proper debt. So in this case, whether Mr. Modine was available such that there is a debt, or that Deed did not follow some procedure. So if you disagreed and believed that Mr. Modine was not available, the only grounds he would have to challenge in the future, as I understand it, is if Deed, for some reason, did not follow its procedural requirements to recapture the debt. To Judge Reyes's question, why aren't Mr. Modine's actions enough? I believe they are. And really, the question for the court is, you know, if this was a matter of restriction and not merely preference, what more could Mr. Modine have done? And what, in fact, did Mr. Modine restrict? Did he restrict his job applications? No, he applied to over 100 jobs in person and online that were up to 40 miles away from his home. Did he restrict his interviews? No, he participated in 20 interviews and didn't turn any down. Did he restrict his job acceptances? No, he never, in fact, received an offer of employment. So there's no evidence in the record that Mr. Modine's testimonial preference manifested itself in any type of restriction. And given that, Mr. Modine seeks reversal of both decisions and an order finding that he was available for suitable employment. Thank you.
Much, Ms. Phillips, thank you very much. Ms. Williams, the matter is submitted.
Thank you.
Ms. Williams, please give my warmest regards to Kate Swenson.
I will, Your Honor, thank you.
Thank you.